The Guardian.
I'm with Jonathan Mills, the director of the Edinburgh International Festival, who's just launched the new festival programme for 2011. Jonathan, this year's event is focusing very, very heavily on Asia in the greatest geographical sense, from the Middle East and Near Asia and South Asia through to the Far East, Japan, Seoul, China, Taiwan. What is the core theme of this for you? How would you describe the essence of this year's festival?
Personally, I'm very interested to explore through this festival program the strong, enduring, abiding relationships built up over thousands of years, the extraordinary connections and influences that not only Europeans have exerted on Asia, but Asians have exerted on Europe. A drawing room in the new town of Edinburgh in the 18th century was European, but it was also Chinese. Every little decoration, a Chinese motif. A living room, a salon in the 19th century, chances are that the fabrics on a sofa were Indian. There are many things that we take for granted, that we sit on, literally, and surround ourselves with every day, and we don't know their origins. This festival is bringing that, to some extent, into a mainstream relief, and saying the beauty, the poise, the romance of China or India or Indonesia or Vietnam, the influence felt by Marco Polo journeying to the court of Kublai Khan, or Debussy being thunderstruck when he first heard the sound of an Indonesian percussion orchestra called the gamelan at the Great Paris Exposition of 1889. The extraordinary effect that Shakespeare has had on drama within Asia. The textile trade that flourished between India and Indonesia. The traditions, both, and the contemporary practices are at the bedrock of this program. I hope it builds a bridge of understanding about not only the things that we know, but the things we take for granted, the things that we assume are different and actually discover are much more similar than we gave them credit for being. And I think, in a sense, what I'm attempting to say by this festival is, in political terms, this is a region of the world that Europeans will increasingly be dealing with. So let's actually bring it into a mainstream cultural celebration. And let's acknowledge that there's more we really know and there's more to celebrate than we might have thought. And let's give ourselves the right, let's give ourselves the opportunity, the confidence, if you like, to engage with those cultures and realise how much closer we are than we really think we are.
On that point, Shakespeare provides one of those examples of the universality of certain dramatic themes. If you have Hamlet and King Lear and The Tempest being reimagined and reinterpreted by, you know, Far Eastern companies, they're doing so introducing their own cultural legends, their own cultural forms, and actually you just discover that these are, you know, human stories that everybody understands. And is that the point at which we all actually share something common, as well as having very diverse forms of music or of dance?
I think it's absolutely the point. I think it's absolutely the point. I think that the way in which, with such ease and beauty and ravishing virtuosity, the Chinese Peking Opera Company from Shanghai can present a Hamlet or Wu Xingguo from Taipei can present the loneliness of King Lear, or Oh Tae-suk from Korea, with his very young company, very energetic company, can present the magic and the mystery and the mayhem of Prospero's Enchanted Islands and The Tempest is a testament to what you've just said. But there's another layer as well. The National Ballet of China are coming with a production called The Peony Pavilion. The original author of that, the original playwright of The Peony Pavilion, was a guy called Tang Jianzu. He died the same year as Shakespeare, 1616. So if you were around in the early 17th century, who were the two great playwrights? I would suggest it was this guy in England called Will Shakespeare, and it was this other poet, this other guy in China, in the Middle Kingdom of China, called Tang. And they were as romantic as each other. Their words still reverberate across the ages. And the Peony Pavilion has often been compared to Romeo and Juliet. And it is indeed the most famous love story of China. It's a gorgeous love story. It's a story about an encounter with a spirit in a garden, with a blossom falling from a tree, and a dream, and a discovery not only about yourself, but your own values and in your own aspirations, your own needs, your own desire to be loved, your human instincts for being nurtured. That's no different to Romeo and Juliet. It unfolds in a completely different time frame, but it, at its heart, and at the heart of so much that is in this year's festival, it's the things that connect us as human beings are so much more powerful and so much closer than we give them credit for. And I think that's worth celebrating, and that's worth holding a festival about.
There are several points in this particular programme where politics, the history of the Far East and the present-day politics does come through the surface, even indirectly. There's the North Vietnamese army featured in one of the productions, but then we also have the question about Taiwan and China, the tensions over sovereignty there, and there are, of course, the questions about artistic freedom in China that may be asked around the performances that are being sponsored by the Chinese government. How do you think that fits in with your aspirations for the festival? There is a question that some people might ask about whether, you know, we are failing to directly deal with that particular question.
I absolutely disagree. I think there is no doubt that there are many voices in China. And when I first went to China in 1978, and I would argue that the most enduring political gesture, the most enduring and influential political statement of the 20th century was the statements of Deng Xiaoping when he decided that that China would move to be a much more open society. And it has indeed become an incredibly much more open society. And in any comments about challenges that one finds in China, one also must acknowledge where China's come from and how far it has progressed. Not denying or disagreeing with the premise, but actually it's about the engagement with Chinese artists, directly with them, that I'm interested in. And as far as the Chinese government is concerned, they have been a very generous facilitator of that engagement. And I was put under no pressure whatsoever to choose Company A or Company B. I was given a very free rein. And let's be clear, this is not just a program that is focusing on China or Taipei or India. And, you know, there are many, many parts of India that are just as fractious and just as contentious as anywhere in the world at the moment, with some, you know, Marxist separatist rebellions springing up here and there. So there is no place that, not even Northern Ireland, that can claim an absolutely perfect minted record on political purity. But that's not what this festival's about. This festival is about engaging with large and small, traditional and contemporary, with a range of voices. And it was very important to me, in that range of voices, in that range of ideas and styles and distinctive artistry that a festival can bring together, especially an Edinburgh festival, that something else would emerge, some broader sense of ideas, attitudes, approaches, philosophies that are at the same time very distinct, whether they be from Yogyakarta, or whether they be from Kanakata, whether they be from Seoul, or whether they be from Shanghai, or whether they be from Rajasthan, they have a very specific, localized distinction. And at the same time, if they're good, and I judge that many of these artists are, they will have a universal message that is very powerful and is something that is incredibly important to feed into our own experiences, to nourish us as rounded human beings, experiencing the full range of human possibilities, the full range of opportunities in the world.
You got quite excited when you were presenting the programme this morning about some particular productions. You were very excited about the Rajas that were going to be performed by Ravi Shankar and others, and you also spoke about the Philip Glass productions with Ikoyi Onuskadze and the other movies. Music seems to be a very strong theme this year. Theatre, less so. There's only a couple of specifically strong theatre productions this year. Is that just an accident or what?
I actually don't agree. I think there's incredibly strong theatre. And we've got a world premiere of a new work by Stephen Earnhardt based on Haruki Murakami's great novel, The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle. We've got a new production by Tim Supple of 1001 Nights, the most beautiful love story, story of survival that turns into a love story, perhaps ever written. Connecting 1001 different stories, a beautiful narrative mosaic drawn from all over the place. We've got a solo King Lear, fantastic production, and a new production of The Tempest. I think it's a very, very substantial theatre programme. That if that was the impression I gave at the press conference, I gave the wrong impression. I'm extremely excited by all of the programme. Our dance programme is extremely strong. What I was trying to say in some of those instances was to draw one's attention to the things that you might actually overlook, the little bits and pieces that are glorious gems, the fact that one has a morning raga in the Queen's Hall and an evening raga in the Usher Hall. So this is a festival in which you can not only excite all your senses at a film by Philip Glass, at a great ballet by the National Ballet of China, at a great production of Shakespeare, or a contemporary rendering of a great Japanese novel, but you can also be devotional, you can be still and quiet, and at the Queen's Hall you can experience the music of mourning, and that is the mourning, not death, morning, the early hours of the day, and the music of evening, in a beautiful fusion of temperature and time.
Jonathan, thank you very much indeed.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.